Podcast.
I'm Jason Seifer.
And I'm Greg Pollock.
And this is episode 77, April 27th, 2009.
The Rails MV Podcast is sponsored this week by Harvest. Harvest is a web-based time tracking and invoicing application dedicated to helping freelancers and developers easily track hours and get paid faster. Simple and intuitive to use, it takes care of your numbers while you focus on delivering great work. Use coupon code RailsNV428 for $10 off the first month of service when you go to getharvest.com.
On Saturday, Rack 1.0 was released. Rack, as many of you are probably already aware, provides a minimal, modular, and adaptable interface for developing web applications in Ruby.
Yeah, there's kind of a lot of controversy over this release.
Why is that?
Well, you know, Rack, kind of pornish.
Oh, and we can't do porn in Rails anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It's officially off limits.
Jeez. Anyway, it's also, this release of Rack has been simplified. So that means if you interface your Ruby web framework, that is really hard to say, and simplified. So that means if you interface your Ruby web framework with Rack, you can run your application on almost any web server which is compatible with Rack.
Which is most of them.
True. The guys over at Fusion have released Ruby Enterprise Edition 1.8.6 2009 421 Twitter Edition.
Whoa, it's a Twitter edition?
Yeah, that means basically that it can't scale.
Oh!
It's written in Scala. Oh!
I was going to make that joke later.
Fail whale. Oh! Anyway, it's not really called that, but the version is based on a newer version of Ruby 1.8.6. It fixes a few bugs. It's upgraded to a faster memory allocator and has Ruby Gems 1.3.2. There's also extra documentation about the settings Twitter uses for the garbage collector, which can give you a 12% speed boost at the cost of higher memory usage.
Oh, so is there code in there from Twitter?
No.
Good, we wouldn't want any Scala flying around in there.
Oh, snap. Also from Fusion, Passenger 2.2.2 was released, which is now Rack 1.0 compatible, and there's also a few other bug fixes.
So I thought, you know, with a podcast, maybe we'll have a couple new sections that have, like, some new sound effects. This is the first one. Are you ready?
Ready.
So if you've been creating web applications for a while now, you've probably had some experience storing files up on S3.
Or at least using a plugin like Attachment Foo or Paperclip that stores images up on S3 for you.
Exactly. But did you know that a few months ago, Amazon added functionality so that you can have your users upload files directly to S3?
I did not know that. That sounds pretty secure, you know, having random website users upload directly to my S3 account.
Exactly.
It's okay. It's okay because the key is my root password.
That's what I thought when I first saw it. I was like, hey, people are going to be uploading, you know, wares and apps and games, you know, that all spell with.
Oh, sweet. What's your S3 account?
Actually, you can make it secure by setting configuration variables in every request. Like, you can make it so the upload form you show the user is only valid for, say, 5 minutes, only works with files under 1 megabyte, and the place where they upload it doesn't even need to be visible to the public.
Oh, cool. So you could have the user upload their avatar directly to S3, and then when it's done, fire off a command to grab the image and do the resizing and whatnot.
Exactly. Taking the load off your application server from having to deal with file uploads.
Yeah, that's huge. So why would anyone not use that?
I don't know. It's pretty cool. And this week, Matthew Williams wrote up a Rails plugin called D2S3, which gives you a form helper to quickly take advantage of this functionality. Along the same lines, some people like GitHub are using a plugin by ELC Technologies that allows you to do file uploads through Flash to S3. This way you can get that file upload progress bar.
If you haven't yet tried to write your own DSL yet in Ruby, Andre Jora wrote a great tutorial last week, which serves as a great introduction to programming DSLs in Ruby. Check it out if you'd like a straightforward introduction.
I can't believe you got that name right in the first try.
Yep.
This week I found myself on John Noonmaker's blog, where he gave some code examples from a simple Rails iPhone web app he created. What was cool about this code is that he showed how to keep user permissions simple by just writing a mixin rather than using a fully-fledged role permissions plugin or gem.
So the moral of the story was Kiss?
Kiss?
I think you misread the vibe there. It means keep it simple, stupid.
Oh.
Awkward.
Yeah. Anyways, he shows off how he tested his mix-in, and his code is really clean, so it's definitely worth a read.
If you find yourself needing to interface your Ruby code with a SOAP web service...
It's time to get a new job.
Yeah, drop the SOAP. No, seriously.
Quit today and stop writing Juby.
Juby?
Ruby code that smells like Java. Juby.
Anyways, this week I found a library by Trollsnack Nielsen called Hand Soap, which takes a more minimalistic approach than Soap for R, the standard SOAP Ruby library.
I was going to say, why not just use Soap for R?
There's this awesome quote about Soap for R from Ruby in Practice.
And what's that?
Quote, "Let me summarize Soap for R. It smells like Java code built on a Monday morning by an EJB coder."
Okay, next time I have to interface something with soap, I'll use some hand soap. Apparently, due to the internals of Ruby 1.9, ParseTree, a library which allows you to access the ParseTree of Ruby code, will not work anymore. So, if you have a library which relies on it, it's time to switch to another Ruby parser library, such as the Ruby Parser Gem by Ryan Davis.
What gems are affected by this?
So far, there's Flog, Ruby to C, Heckle, Ruby to Ruby, Zenhack, Supercaller, Ambition, and a bunch of other ones, including Red, Reek, Rudy, RubyDiff, oh, and Sake.
And the authors of these gems just need to make sure they switch off of ParseTree for them to work?
Exactly. Maybe start using the Ruby Parser gem.
The Clearance Authentication gem recently got refactored into a Rails engine.
And Clearance, who produces that one again?
You know, the guys that smash into things, the guys that are robots.
Those robots seem to be smashing every week now.
Yeah, they do. Well, they put out some great stuff. Anyway, this week they converted their great authentication gem, Clearance, into a Rails engine for use with Rails 2.3.
And why is this good to be a Rails engine?
Making it an engine just feels a little bit cleaner for authentication plugin.
Yeah, that's nice.
The Thoughtbot guys also wrote about some of the problems that they ran into while converting it into an engine that you may want to take into account if you're going to be attempting the same thing.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're new to Ruby or Rails and you haven't taken the time to really learn it yet, then...
You're telling me there are people who listen to this podcast who don't program Ruby?
Yep, I happen to know there are a few.
That's awesome. And right now we're talking to you.
Yeah. And you should probably know about an event called Day of Ruby taking place May 16th in Tampa or May 30th in Orlando. Day of Ruby is a full day of Ruby and Rails training being taught by Corey Foy and Corey Haynes.
Corey Haynes, that's the guy who goes around the country pair programming, right?
Yep, both Coreys are great teachers, and I hear they're going to be using test-driven development to build a Rails application from the ground up.
Awesome.
You can check them out at dayofruby.com.
So, Greg, you know Active Support and how it has the great built-in caching?
Right, like read and write and fetch?
Yeah, all that stuff. Well, Rain Henricks this week, just the other day, put up a blog post on how to cache anything with Active Support.
Like anything at all?
Well, almost anything. What he had to do was interface with a service called Endica, and it's basically a web service that he had to go out and fetch to. And these calls could take anywhere from like 2 to 500 milliseconds.
Okay.
So after writing a little caching library for it, which interfaced with Active Support, he got it down to 5 milliseconds, which I don't know if our math is correct, but that's 10,000% faster. Anyway, he did this all in 20 lines of code using Active Support's built-in caching. 20 lines of code.
Oh, I see. He needed to make sure that the web service request didn't change every time somebody requested this.
Right. Basically, he took the e-tag that it sent back and used that as the cache key.
Ah, there you go.
Anyway, he has a great write-up of what he did over on his blog, so check out the link in the show notes for caching anything with Active Support.
Oh, that's interesting. So what he did is like bring HTTP sort of view caching into a lower level at the sort of Rails object caching level.
Right. And, you know, since you're doing it with the Rails caching level, you get everything that the Rails caching provides for free.
Nice. It's time for another one of those sections I was talking about. Are you ready?
Sure.
This one's entitled Melt Your Brain. Melt Your Brain. Melt Your Brain. So let's take a moment to talk about thread safety in Ruby.
But who really cares about threads? I watched your Scaling Ruby Envy cast, and I thought the moral of the story was that if you want to be fast, you should always run single-threaded.
Well, yeah. I mean, we really can't do multi-threading, which takes advantage of multiple CPUs in Ruby. So running a single thread is going to be faster and more scalable if you have unlimited RAM, certainly.
So why bother talking about threading? It's making me tired.
Well, for two reasons. First of all, JRuby gives us true cross-CPU multi-threading. And if you're sharing data across multiple pieces of code, it's going to be much faster and easier to share data from thread to thread rather than having to deal with processes.
Oh, right. Because if you're dealing with the process-to-process communication, you have to be serializing data over sockets. And threads share the same memory space, so it's really easy to pass around data.
Exactly.
But if you're dealing with shared data, don't you have to then worry about properly using mutex locks around your shared pieces of data? You know, so that two threads don't write to the same variable at the same time, ending the world?
Yeah, and some people might see this as a disadvantage of using Ruby, and that's part of the reason why some other languages like Oz or Erlang do concurrency a little better.
Interesting. And because we're talking about it, this must mean someone solved this problem at least a little bit.
Well, yeah, our friend Larry Deal recently released a library called Dataflow, which makes all variables write once.
Oh, immutable.
Which makes it easier to write multi-threaded programs without synchronization bugs, because it's no longer possible for two threads to write different values to the same variable, and thus there's no need to synchronize writes.
Interesting. But if you can only write a variable once, how would you add new items onto a queue or an array?
Oh, you just create a new array.
Okay, so you just kind of got to jump away from that. Need to program a little differently. I see where this is going.
Obviously, there's a little more to it, but I recommend you check out the blog post by Brian Moriarty to learn more about it.
And this has been Melt Your Brain!
Greg, did you know that the date class is slow in Ruby?
It is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're retrieving a lot of date column data from the database, you know, or comparing a bunch of different date objects, things can get slow pretty quickly.
And this is a is there a solution to this?
Yes, there is. A library called Date Performance by Ryan Tomei. Couldn't we all use that?
Date Performance.
Anyway, it's by Ryan Tomeiko, which, as you might have guessed, rewrites the slow parts of date in C. I'm sorry.
You know, I heard that this is a gem that actually can improve your date performance. It's called Member Extension.
Is that built on Rack?
Oh
snap.
Where do we go with that?
I don't know. Turbo puns. Anyway, for more information, Alexander Dymo wrote up a great blog entry describing how he needed date performance to speed up his Rails app.
If you want to give Passenger with Nginx a try with a fresh version of Ubuntu, Vince over on the Hakito blog posted a nice walkthrough on how to install everything you need to get up and running on Ubuntu 9.04 Jaunty Jackalope.
Jaunty Jackalope?
Now there is an awesome release name.
I don't know, I think Date Performance is a pretty awesome release name also. And if that's too hands-on for you, you could always use Moonshine to get up and running.
You know, I hear Moonshine helps with date performance as well.
No, I'm talking about Moonshine, you know, the tools from Rails Machine that configures your server, you know, gets it ready, and then deploys your application.
Okay, not like the alcohol Moonshine.
Right. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is that Melvin Ram wrote up a great tutorial this week, which steps you through everything you need to do to get your server in shape from a blank Ubuntu server.
Nice. Last Tuesday, Google announced the public release of the Google Analytics API to the public. And 2 days later, the guys over at Viget Labs released their Ruby gem for interfacing with it called Garb.
Garb. That's awesome. I remember it used to be hard to pull data out of your Google Analytics. You had to use Scrubbit or some other automated tool.
Or, yeah, pull the data out of an RSS feed. And so, yeah, it's great that we now have this API where we can pull data out of Google Analytics into our web apps easily.
Nice. This week, I found an interesting Ruby fork called Diamondback Ruby, which aims to bring static typing to Ruby without compromising the expressiveness of the language. You get type inference, so most typing is figured out without you really needing to do anything. Type annotation, so you can specify type if you want. Dynamic checking, also, so that methods can be checked at runtime. And meta programming support.
That's great. It's awesome to see new forks of Ruby popping up.
I know.
If you want to run cruise control on Mac OS X, Michael Harper wrote up a great tutorial, which you should check out. It also has integration with Xcode and Git source control.
I guess we would use this if we were running like Leopard server or something.
Or if you just want to run cruise control in the background and build your local Ruby applications every time you make a commit.
Huh, I guess that makes sense. The Rails MV podcast is sponsored this week by New Relic. From Rails apps just starting out to the world's busiest online enterprises, RPM has a real-time Rails solution for everyone. Whether you're a developer or operations team lead, or you manage a far-flung IT empire, RPM supports your goals. Monitor 24/7, find problems, get a Rails tune-up, speed software development, and scale your application. Check them out at newrelic.com. Thanks so much for listening to the Rails MV podcast, and make sure to tune in every Wednesday for the latest news in the Ruby and Rails worlds.